All right, Jabosai, good morning. Let's begin. Everyone. So today's daf is Mem Gimel 43. We are picking up on Mem Beis Amud Beis, literally the last line. Says the Gemara, Va'atem i'atem. So remember again, yesterday we spoke about the idea, the Mishnah explained the speech of the Mashuach Melchama, the speech of the Kohen anointed for war, and how he contrasted, the war effort.
And how
Mashuach Melchama contrasted the way that the Gentile nations go out to war and the way that we go out to war. And the Mashuach Melchama said that they go out to war again dependent on the salvation of a human warrior. We go out to war ultimately again based on the ability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save us. So the Gemara says, Va'atem. So why does the Kohen Mashuach Melchama build this up in such a dramatic fashion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes out to us with war? So we'll say, take a look at Rashi. V'chol kach lama, omer lahem, umayi avtocha zu, sheftichon, ki Hashem Elokeichem ha'aleich, v'lo amar, ki Hashem Elokeichem imochem. Umayi halicha zu, demash moholich mamish. So what the Gemara is bothered by is that the Mashuach Melchama literally says that God is going with you. God is walking with you. What does that mean that God is walking with you? Why doesn't it just say that the Rebbe Shalom is with you? What does it mean God is walking with you? To which the Gemara says, Shashem v'chol kinuyav, top of Mem Gimel, Shashem v'chol kinuyav, because God, with all of his names, munachin ba'aron, are all literally placed in the Aron. In other words, we'll say that according to this opinion in the Gemara, it is the Aron itself that goes out with Klal Yisrael ultimately to war, and that the piece of parchment with the Shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the name of God, is resting inside the Aron. And as such, again, quite literally, the Ribono Shel Olam is going out to war with the Klal. V'chino Omer, and so too the Pasuk says, V'yishlach Osa Moshe Elef L'mata L'tzava, Osam ve'es Pinchas. So the Gemara says, Osam, so remember, literally it says, that Moshe Rabbeinu sends them out to war, 1,000 for each tribe, them and Pinchas. So the Gemara says, Osam, who does that refer to? Elu Sanhedrin. This refers to the idea that the Sanhedrin went out to war with them. So Pinchas, who is Pinchas? Zem Ashuach Melchama. So we'll say, interesting enough, the Gemara says that after Pinchas is given the bris kuna, the covenant of the priesthood, after he exhibited the moral courage and killed Zimri and Cosby, so interestingly enough, the position that he was chosen to fill was the position of Mashuach Melchama, the position of the Kohen anointed to go out and lead the army into war. Uklei HaKodesh, and what does it mean when it says you're going to take literally the holy utensils with you? Ze'aron veluchos shebo. This refers to the Aron Kodesh along with the luchos that were in it. V'chatzotzros ha'teruah, and what does it mean, the trumpets that resound the teruah, ila ha'shofros. This refers ultimately again to the shofros which accompanied the army into battle. To which the Gemara says, Tana, we learned, lo lechinam halach Pinchas l'mochama. So I'll say, just you should know, this is not our topic for now, but there has to be a fundamental machlokes. Here the Gemara is making it sound that it's the Aron HaBris, the Ark of the Covenant, Mamish the Aron, that goes out to war. So there are differences of opinion with this. Some say, we know that there are two Arons. There was the Aron that Moshe Rabbeinu built before going up to Har Sinai in order that there would be a place to place the Luchos when he came back down. And then there was the Aron that Bezalel built, right, for the Mishkan. So some say that it was that first Aron that went out with the people to war. That's what some say. In fact, again, we know the famous story of Chafni and Pinchas, the sons of Shmuel Hanavi, who once took the real Aron out to war, and it was captured by the Plishtim afterwards. Actually, we learned about that not so long ago. So just pointing out, here, this Gemara makes it sound like that it's the regular Aron that's ultimately taken out to war, so it's subject to Machlokes. To which the Gemara is supposed to say, now that we brought up Pinchas, the Gemara says, Tana, lo lechinam halach Pinchas l'mochama. So Pinchas didn't just tam go out to war against Midian, ela lipara din avi imo. But rather, when Pinchas led the army out into war in the capacity of Mashuach Melchama, so he went out to literally repay a debt, lipara din avi imo, to take revenge for his grandfather, his maternal grandfather, Shine'emar, v'hamidyonim machru oso el Mizraim. Because the Midyonim, we know, sold Yosef, the Gemara makes it sound like over here, that what? That Elazar, excuse me, that Pinchas is a descendant of Yosef. And therefore, again, when he leads the army out to battle against Midian, he's ultimately doing so as a way of taking revenge for what the Midianim did to his father. The Pinchas mi Yosef asi? Are you telling me then that Pinchas is a descendant of Yosef? The Hok Sibi at the Pasuk says, Ve'elazar ben Aaron, Lakach mivnos putiel lo li'isha. But yet the Pasuk says that Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen, took for himself from the daughters of Putiel for a wife. Who's Putiel? So we'll say, so Putiel, the Gemara understands, is Yisro. Is Yisro. So it says that Elazar married a girl from Yisro, which ultimately means that what? That Pinchas, his son, is not a descendant of Yosef, but Pinchas, his son, is a descendant ultimately of Yisro. My love, the Asi mi Yisro, Shepite Magalam la Avolas Kochavim. So this is interesting that Putiel is one of the names of Yisro, and this name represents the fact Shepitem Agolam La'avodah means he fattened animals for idolatrous worship. So you see over here that Pinchas is not a descendant of Yosef, but he's a descendant of Yisro, to which the Gemara says, Lo, mi Yosef, Shepit Peit be Yitzro. No, so Putiel's reference to Yosef, Shepit Peit, Rashi says over here, Zilzal V'Kavosh also, who conquered his Yitzhara, Ay V'Halo, Shvatim Mevazin also. But yet after Pinchas killed Zimri and Cusbi, the other tribes were disparaging him, and they were saying, "Re'isem ben Puti zeh shepitem avi ima agam la'avodos kochavim." Do you see this son of Puti, whose grandfather fattened animals for idolatry? Yarog nasi miYisrael. Now he's going to kill a prince of the Jewish people. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. Welcome back. So now what happens? So again, they're disparaging him. They're disparaging him that he killed a Jewish prince. So we'll say this clearly indicates again that his lineage is from Yisro. El I avua di ime mi Yosef, ime di ime mi Yisro. Rather, we'll say the Gemara says, remember, on his mother's side, there are two sides. There's his maternal grandfather and his maternal grandmother. See, if you want to say that his maternal grandfather came from Yosef, his maternal grandmother came from Yisro. V'im'ime di'ime mi Yosef. And if you want to say that his maternal grandmother came from Yosef, avua di'ime, ultimately his maternal grandfather mi Yisro. Deka nami d'chsiv. So essentially the Gemara says is, you're both right. You're both right. In other words, that Elazar married a woman who on one side, on her mother's side, meaning you could interchange the mother and father. So Elazar's wife, Pinchas' mother, on one side was from Yisro, and on another side was from Yosef. Deka nami dechsev, which is amazing, by the way, because the common denominator between Yisro and Yosef are two men who conquered their Yetzer, right? Yisro conquered his Yetzer ultimately for Avodah Zarah, so Yosef conquered his Yetzer for Arayos. Deka nami dechsev mibnos putiel, Trei mashma shmamina. We'll say in the Gemara says you could go ahead and learn this out from the spelling of Putiel. Putiel, the Gemara says, is written male. It's written completely. It's written with the yud. It could have just been written without the yud as well. The fact that it's written with the yud male indicates that it's two people, shepitpet or shepitpetu. Two people ultimately, again, who conquered or overcame their Yetzer. A reference to the fact that Pinchas has incredible yichus, being descended, first of all, on his father's side, of course, from Aaron HaKohen. Remember, he's Elazar's son. So he's Aaron HaKohen's grandson on one side, and on the other side, a descendant of both Yisro as well as Yosef, says the Mishnah. So the Gemara goes on now with the message of the Mashuach Nochama, the Mishnah, excuse me. So Dibra HaShotrim Ela'am. So the Shotrim, remember, are the enforcers. The officers of the army will say to the people, Leymor, Mi Ha'ish Asher Bana Bayis Chadosh Velo Chancho. Who is the person who has built a new home but has not yet inaugurated it? Yel, in other words, I will say, which for our purposes means he did not yet live in it. Yelech v'yashuv lebeso. Let him go back and return to his home. Echad habone beis hateven, beis habakar, beis haitzim, beis haozros. This refers to whatever kind of house one builds. Whether one builds a home for, meaning to a storage houses to store his straw, to store his cattle, for his wood, or to store a base also means like to store his oil or to store his wine. Echad abona ve'echad alokeach. Whether you built the home yourself, whether you purchased the home yourself, ve'echad hayoresh, or whether you inherited the home, ve'echad shenasan lo matana, or whether you received that home as a gift. In other words, Rabbi Yosi, what the Gemara is pointing out over here is the explicit lashon of the pasuk seems to indicate to us that who gets to go home from war? Someone who actively built a home and did not yet get to live in it. What the Mishnah is teaching me is that no, it's someone who has a home and has not yet had the opportunity to live in it. So however it is that you have that home, whether you have it ultimately through inheritance, through purchase, through gifting, however it is, if you got it and you did not get to live in it, you get to go home from war. Umia ish asher nata keren velo chilalo. Similarly, who is the man who has planted a vineyard and has not yet had the opportunity to enjoy the fruits of that vineyard? So what does this refer to? Echad hanoteya keren. This refers to someone who literally plants a vineyard. Ve'echad hanoteya chamisha ilani ma'achal. And here's what's interesting. Is in general, one would go ahead and say that a vineyard is like a large expanse of vines. Or remember, vineyard will also see, doesn't have to mean just vines. It also means a large expanse of trees. The Gemara says the basic definition of a vineyard, by the way, is someone who plants five trees, five fruit trees, and has not yet had the opportunity to eat from them. Ba'afilu mechameshes haminim. Even if the five trees are five different types of species. If you look at Rashi, Rabosai, chamisha ilani ma'achal, because five trees are the minimum definition of a vineyard, or better stated, of an orchard. So Rashi says the Bahachi Avikarim Shtayim Keneged Shtayim VeAchas Kiyotzei Zanav Kaze. Well, this Rashi even gives us bonus to a picture, mentioned an incredible thing here. Right? We could have imagined on our own, but this is two opposite two with the fifth coming out like a tail. This is we've seen this actually before. This is the minimum dimension of what constitutes an actual orchard. So even if you just planted this and did not have the opportunity to eat from the fruit of it yet, you're permitted to come back for more.
Four year plus exemption.
Correct. So the echad hamavrich, the echad hamarkiv. So I'll say certainly again, if you look at Rashi, so mavrich and markiv. Actually, we'll see this on Amud Beis. But mavrich and markiv refers ultimately again to grafting. And there's another process where, I don't know what the English term for it is, but where you take, let's say, a vine, and you take the top of the vine, and you bend it over, and you plant it into the ground. That second part then goes ahead and takes root as well. Then you cut it in the middle. So you essentially make two vines from one. So Rosa, this is even more interesting, because now what we're saying is, even if you did not actually plant something, but instead you just grafted or rerooted something, the echad, and that would also allow you to come back for more. The echad halokeach, the echad hayoresh, whether you bought a vineyard or you inherited one, the echad shenasan lo matano, or whether you went ahead and received the vineyard as a gift. Next exemption. So I'll say, so that's the planting exemption. So far we've now had the house building exemption, the planting exemption. Umia ish asher aras isha. What about the exemption ultimately for getting married? This is true whether you're marrying a basula, a virgin, or whether you're marrying an amana, a widow. Even if, again, the marriage that we're talking about over here is a person's brother passed away, and he has to do yibum, he's able to do yibum with this woman. Even if he's ready to go to war and he heard that his brother just died in battle, Choser Ubalo, he goes back home, because now that his brother died, he obviously has an obligation to do Yibum. Kol Elu V'Elu, so we'll say all of these people mentioned. So remember, we've gone through now the three categories: of someone who built a home, someone who planted a vineyard, and someone who went ahead and married a woman. In all of these cases, Kol Elu V'Elu Shomen Divrei Koin Marchei Mochama, so we'll say all of these people hear the words of the Koyim HaShoach Mechama, and they go home. The Chozin Umesapkin Mayin Umazun Umetaknes Adrachim. And I will say, these people, as much as they're exempt from going to war, they're not exempt from the war effort. So they go back home, and what do? They have to, they're part of the supply line, right? They make sure that the soldiers have food, soldiers have drink. They go out and they take care of public works, making sure that the roads are okay. Essentially helping out with the war effort, but helping out with the war effort from the home front. The Elu She'inon Chozun. But I will say, these are the people, ultimately, again, who do not go back. In other words, that if you did these things, it would not give you the ability to return from war. And who are those people? Habone Beishar, Achsadja Umer Pesas. Now, I will say, these are examples of structures that are not homes. So Beishar is a guardhouse. Achsad Rabosai is like a roofed porch, and Mirpeses literally is like a balcony, but not a balcony off a house. Like if you could imagine, if you have a two-story apartment building, and let's say the top story, you want to have an outdoor space where people could walk down from the second floor to the first floor, that's called the Mirpeses. So also the common denominator in these structures is they're not homes. They can't constitute a place where a person could live. Therefore, if you built one of these, that doesn't get you out of war. Hanotea arba iloni ma'achal. Similarly, if somebody planted only 4 fruit trees, or v'chamisha iloni strak, or 4 or 5 non-fruit bearing trees, so we'll say in this case again, this would not constitute planting of a vineyard. Similarly, hamachzir grushaso, if a man remarries a woman who he divorced. So we'll say again, that does not constitute a situation where a person could come back from war because of that. Similarly, a model of Kohen Gadol, so we'll say, so Machzir Grushaso is an example ultimately of a legal marriage. So let's say again, a man divorced a woman, then he did Erusin because he wants to remarry her. This would not be a situation ultimately, again, that he were permitted to come back from war. The next case is illegal marriages. Amana le kohen gadol, if a kohen gadol marries an amana, or grusha vechalutza le kohen head yoked, or a regular kohen marries a divorcee or a chalutza, or mamzeres unusina le Yisrael, or a Yisrael marries a mamzeres or an asino, or a bas Yisrael a mamzer ulanasin, or a man who's a mamzer marries a bas Yisrael. In all of those cases, lo hayachozer, because we're both saying again, which makes sense. Obviously, one is not going to come back from war because of an illegal marriage. Therefore, again, lemaisa, again, they would have to go out to battle. Similarly, the Gemara says, Rabbi Huda Omer, Af habone bayis al mechono lo hayachozer. This is actually very interesting. Rabbi Huda says that even if you rebuilt a home on the same foundation, you would not come back from war. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Al mechono, sisra ubenao b'midah rishona, in a chos d'lav chadashu, ho'av lo chidesh lo hosef alav, afilo etzlo ino chadashu gram elakach v'yorosh. Rabbi Huda says, a person chooses to knock down their house and to rebuild the very same house on the very same spot, even though technically speaking it's a new house, since there's no chidesh in the house, there's nothing new, there's nothing additional in the house, therefore lemaisa, again, a person will not return for more because of such a home. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Af habone bayis levenim b'sharon lo hayachozer. So we'll say, so again, this I actually spoke about this on Yom Kippur, right? That the halacha was that if you built a brick home in the Sharon, in the coastal plain of Eretz Yisrael, so ultimately, again, you would not go back from war for that as well, because those houses fell down, because it had to do with the clay soil of the Sharon was not really fit for building. So essentially, if you built a home that you knew was going to fall down, Lamaisi would not come back from war for that as well. Rashi says over here, Rashi goes on both sides of this daf. He says, now on the left-hand column, Afabone bayis levenim b'sharon, makom u'sheshmo sharon, uve'ina karka yafet le'levenim, we'll say these homes fell down twice in every 7 years. Remember, we saw this on Yom Kippur, because the Kohen Gadol, part of his tefillah would be that for the Anshei Sharon, Shelo Yehei Batehem Kivrehem. Literally, he would daven for the people of the Sharon that their homes should not become their graves. Elu She'ein Zazin Mim Koman. Now, we'll say, so up until now, what we've been speaking about is the following. People who are obligated to report for service, but then after hearing the announcements of the Kohen Gadol, of the Kohen Mashiach Mechama, are permitted to go back home. Then there's another category of people who do not even report to the army. Elu Shem Zazin Mimkoman, Bana Bayis V'chanacho. Somebody built a home, Rabbi Osei, and he's currently living in that home, but he's within the first year of living within his home. He does not show up for service. Not a Karen Mechilolo, if somebody planted a vineyard, ultimately again, and is enjoying the vineyard within the first year, he does not go ahead and report for service. Rashi says over here, he's not yet lived in a year. When we speak about he hasn't enjoyed it for a full year, this is talking about in the fourth year of the vineyard, because for the first 3 years, the fruit is arla, which means he can't enjoy it at all. So now it's year number 4, and he's in the midst of year number 4, he doesn't even show up for battle. Hanoseis arusaso, hakones es yevimto. Somebody, again, a man married his arusa, or he married the yevama. And then what? And he's in the first year of marriage, he doesn't even show up for battle. Shin emar, naki yihye lebeiso shana achas. He shall be naki, literally he shall be clean, free of all responsibility, only in his home for the first year. So lebeiso, zebeiso. So when it says for his home, that refers to the exemption of his home. Yihye, he shall be zekarmo. This refers ultimately to his vineyard. V'simach es ishto, he will rejoice with his wife. Zu ishto, this refers to his wife. Asher lakach, that he took. Lahavi es yevimto. This includes even a yibum situation. So we'll say in these situations, so we'll say, so remember, in this category over here, these are individuals who are in the first year, either of having built a home and living in it, enjoying the fruits of the orchard or the vineyard in year number 4, and then the first year of marriage. All of these individuals do not even show up for battle at all. And similarly, ein maspikin lahem mayim umazon ve'in metakin es adrachim. So not only do they not show up for battle, but what? They also are not obligated to participate in the war effort at all. They do not even have to help out, you know, with the food supply or anything else. They're totally exempt. They're permitted simply to go ahead and enjoy the new stage of life in which they are currently engaged. Says the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. So we learned. So Tana Rabbanan. The Dibra Shotrim. So also remember the Pasuk says that the Shotrim would speak to the army. Yachol Dvarim Shel Atzman. So I might have thought that the Shotrim just simply convey their own message to the army. Kishu Omer Vayasva Shotrim Hari Dvarim Shel Atzman. That came because the Pasuk later on says that the Shotrim will go ahead and add on to that which the Mashuach Melchama said. So the Gemara says, Ha Ma'ani Mekayim V'Dibra Shotrim. So what does it mean when it says that the Shotrim spoke? But Dibra Mashuach Melchama Chasum Medaber. It means that the Shotrim spoke the words of the Mashuach Melchama. Aye, but why do you need the Shotrim to go ahead, the officers to go ahead and speak the words of the Mashuach Melchama? Ha-ketzad. What's the case? Kohen medaber v'shotir mashmiya. We'll say the Kohen Mashuach Melchama would state the instructions, and what would happen? The Shoter would yell it out, right? So the Kohen Mashuach Melchama, lav dafki, he'd be heard by everyone, so he would make the statement, and the Shoter would go ahead and announce it again louder so everybody would hear it. Tani Chada, we learned, Kohen medaber v'shoter mashmiya. So we'll say, in one braisa, so we learned that the Kohen speaks and the Shoter just simply yells out or amplifies that which the Kohen said. Tani Idach, another braisa says, Kohen medaber v'kohen mashmiya, that the Kohen speaks and the Kohen makes his own words heard. The Tani Idach, and another braisa says, Shoter medaber shoter mashmiya. Another braisa says that it's the Shoter who speaks and the Shoter ultimately, again, who makes his words heard afterwards. So Rabbi Haki, so what's the case? So essentially the Gemara says is the following, that in this section of Kiseitze, where the Torah discusses all of the different halachos concerning going out to war, people had different speaking parts. So we'll say in the first section, from Benigash until V'dibru HaKohen, so the Kohen speaks, and the Kohen is also responsible for making his words heard. Me V'dibru Ad V'yisvu, from the word V'dibro until V'yisvu in the parasha, Sakoin medaber v'shoter mashmiya, the Kohen speaks and the Shoter makes his words heard. V'yisvu v'ilach Shoter medaber v'shoter mashmiya, and from V'yisvu until the end of the section, so the Shoter speaks and the Shoter makes his words heard. So both sides, so everybody has different speaking parts in this speech prior to going out to war. Mia ish asher bana bayis, who is the person who built a new home? So Tan Rabbanan, Asher Bana, Ainli Ela Asher Bana, Lakach, V'yaresh, V'nitan lo matan minayin. So I'll say, so when the Pasuk says that the person who built a new home is exempt from going out to war, I only know that it's a person who built a home. A person who purchased a home, inherited a home, or had a home given to him as a gift, where do I know that such an individual is exempt from going out to battle? Talmud Lomar, Miha ish asher bana bayis. Who is the man who built on that? What the Gemara's darshan over here is that the word ish is extra. The word ish is that it could have just said mi asher bana bayis. The fact that it has to include the word ish indicates to us what for drasha purposes. Rashi says over here mi ish ribuyu hu dematzi lemichtav mi asher bana. It's an additional phrase because the pasuk could have just said, "Who is the person who built all midlok siv asher bayis bana darosh bay bana mikamakum?" So we'll say, therefore, the word ish comes to teach us the darshan that however this individual comes to this home, whether he builds it himself, he buys it, he inherits it, however it is, if it's new for him, then lemaisi comes back for more. Inli ela bayis, I only know an actual home, meaning actual domicile. The rabbos beis ateven ubeis habakar ubeis etim beis haotzros. How do I know that it also includes if a person built a new storage home for his straw, or a barn for his cattle, or a place to store his wood, or a place to store his oil or his wine? How do I know that those structures are also called a home, and a person would be exempted from battle for building those? Tamud lomar asher bana mikol makom. Therefore, the pasuk says that he built asher bana. So asher bana means anything that you built. So the gemara's yachol shanim. Rabbi saying that you understand the common denominator between those structures are they can be used as a domicile. They can ultimately they have walls, they have a roof, and therefore, technically speaking, they could be used for dwelling purposes. These individuals are required to go back. This is not, I want to fight. Anyway, these guys go back. The idea over here, we'll say, is an idea in distractions. You know, we don't want distracted soldiers. So you could say that your mind is not on this, but your mind's going to be on it. Therefore, we'd rather you go back. And again, remember, they're still helping. These guys are still involved in the war, just in a different way. So the Gemara says, Yachol shanimar ba'afa bona be'sharach zachom epeses. I might have thought that therefore this also includes someone who builds a guardhouse, a roofed entranceway to his home, or a mirpasas, the outdoor walkway in the second floor story. Talmud lomar bayis. Therefore, the pasuk says no. He has to have built a home. Ma bayis haroi ledira. Just like a home that we're talking about, it has to be a home that's fit for dwelling. Av kol haroi ledira. So too, you only go back for more for something that is fit for dwelling. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says bayis kamashua. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov takes a more narrow view, and he says the only home that you go back for from war is what? An actual bayis. So if you built a storehouse for your animals or for your wood or for your oil, that you do not go back for. Lo chanach, v'lo chanachol. So both say, remember, the pasuk could have said lo chanach, that you did not inaugurate, but instead it said lo chancho, that you makes it possessive. Why? Prat legazlan. This comes to exclude someone who steals a home. But it's interesting. So if you steal a home, which is interesting halachic discussion in of itself about whether or not karka nigzelas, can land be stolen or not, but leaving that aside, so if a person steals a home and he goes out to war, and he says, well, look, you know what, I've got a new home, I'm going back, so we say to such an individual, sorry, that's not a proper exemption from going to battle. So lema d'lok Rabbi Yosef Lili, and I will say that this appears not to be in kafaris Rabbi Yosef Lili, why not? D'i Rabbi Yosef, I'm sorry, D'i Rabbi Yosef Lili ha'amar v'rach ha'leva, because mostly we'll discuss this later on. One of the other exemptions is someone who is just simply fearful. Rachalil means a soft heart. He's afraid. And Rabbi Yosef Lili says, who does that refer to? Zehamisyare me avero shebiado. So Rabbi Yosef Lili says, this refers to someone who what? Someone who is afraid of the averos he has committed. Rabbi Yosef, now watch this. So obviously, Rabbi Yosef, if somebody is a thief, he'd be going back anyway. Why? Forget about the home. Forget about whether or not it's his house or not his house. If he's a thief, he's going back because of the averos. To which the Gemara says, no, what's the case? This is actually very interesting. Afilu tim Rabbi Yosef Lili. This can even reflect to Rabbi Yosef Lili. How so? Kegom da'avad tshuva v'yohiv dame. Well, say, let's say again, the thief did tshuva. He did tshuva, and he paid for the house. So watch this. So he stole the house. He did tshuva. He paid for the house. He paid the owner for the house. And now what happens? So he's no longer a god. He's no longer a thief. See, havi lo keach for the hadar. Well, one second. If that's the case, that he stole the house, now he paid for the house, and he hasn't yet lived in it as the owner, then what? He should be permitted to go back from war because he's got a new house. To which the Gemara says, no. Kevan de meikara betoris gzeila asaliyah de lo. So this is the one exception, that if this home came into your possession originally through theft, even though now you made amends for it and you paid the owner for it, lemaisa, that type of home does not exempt you from going out to war. So again, so there is a case of a new home where ultimately you won't go back for more, and that's a case where you originally stole it. Now you did tshuva, now you paid for it, but lemaisa, you don't get to go back from battle because of that. Umiya isha shanata kera, next case. Who is the person who planted a vineyard? So Tan Rabbanah, so we'll say we learned, Asher Nata, that he planted, Ainli Elanata. Now remember, if you just look at the pasuk is dafka talking about someone who planted a vineyard. So I only know someone who actually planted it. Ainli Elanata. Lakach v'yarash v'nitin lo matan minayin. So how do I know that this applies to a new vineyard? Even if I myself didn't plant it, but instead what? I purchased it, or I inherited it, or I received it as a gift. How do I know that that is also called the type of vineyard from which I go back from battle? Talmud lomar umi ha'ish asher nata kerem. Because we'll say same thing as we saw before. The extra word of ish comes to include additional cases. Se'eini ela kerem, I only know like a real vineyard or a real orchard. Minayin l'rabos chamisha ilani ma'achal ma'afilu mishar minin. How do I know that it even applies to five different types of trees? I suppose say five. How do I remember? See, here's what's interesting. If you would tell me five trees, all the same type of tree, I hear that that constitutes an orchard, or we'll call it an orchard. But interestingly enough, it applies if I have five trees, even if those five trees are five different species. How do I know that that also constitutes an orchard from which I go back from war? Talmud Lomar, Asher Nata. Because the pasuk says again, that you planted. Yochol Shani Mar Behanotea Arba Ilani Ma'achal, V'chamisha Ilani Srak. So I might have thought, well, once we're going to be so expansive, perhaps it should also include four different types, even if you only planted four fruit trees, or five non-fruit-bearing trees, Talmud Lomar, Kerem. Therefore, the pasuk says, it's dafkas to satisfy the criteria, ultimately, of Kerem, of a vineyard, of an orchard, which means, again, a minimum of five trees. We'll say that was the diagram of Rashi, 2-2, and the one that comes out like a tail, and of course, it has to be fruit-bearing trees. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Omer, Kerem, Kimashmo. We'll say, so Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov doesn't like any of this stuff, and he says, Kerem means Kerem. First of all, Kerem means vineyard. It does not mean an orchard. So therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if you planted trees but did not yet get to eat from the fruit, you do not go back for more. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the ability or the license to come back for more is dafka limited to an actual vineyard itself. So the Gemara goes weiter. Lo chilel v'lo chilelo. So we'll say, remember again, the pasuk, remember the Gemara is just picking up on what appears to be unnecessary wording. So the pasuk could have said v'lo chilel, that he did not go ahead. It was not enjoyed. Instead, it says v'lo chilelo, he did not enjoy it. Prat lemavrich ulamarkiv. This comes to exclude someone who is mavrich and markiv. Look at Rashi. Mavrich is shekofef hazemura o hayichabar. So that's what I described before. So mavrich is where you take, let's say, the vine and you bend it back into the ground. And you allow that second that tip to take root, and then again you snip it in the middle, where ultimately again you're making now two new vines. And Markiv, Rashi says, is grafting. Shenokev ha'ilan v'nolto min arach sheva anfei ha'ilan v'tochev l'socho v'osa anaf besoch ha'nekev v'nose mimin osa ilan shenolto mimenu v'yisa mutar laharkiv mishnei ilanos shezeh perosein dasin v'zeh perosav dakin. So we'll say, so grafting, of course, is you take a branch from a tree. Now Rashi understands that we're talking about grafting of the same species. So let's say you have two apple trees, but one apple tree only produces small apples. Another one produces large apples. So you want to graft. You want to graft a branch of the large apple tree into the weaker apple tree. That you can do. So you stick a branch with some kind of opening into the tree, and ultimately, again, it takes with the root tree. So now, Abel says, here's what's interesting. So this Bryson now is saying that Lamaisa, again, if you grafted, or if you went ahead and you bent over the vine, but you did not yet get the opportunity to eat from the new fruit of the grafting, or we'll call it bending, that does not exempt you from going out to war. That's not called planting a new vineyard that you could come back from war. I v'ha'anan t'nan, echad honoteva, echad amavrich, v'echad amarki. But I will say, but that's not what the Mishnah said. Our Mishnah said that whether you actually planted new trees, or whether you bent the vine, or whether you went ahead and you grafted, that these cases, and you did not yet get to eat the fruit of these items yet, that Lamaisa, again, this would be grounds for ultimately coming back out of war, for not going to battle. So we'll say, it's contrary to what we learned in the Mishnah. Am Rabbi Zera, Am Rav Chista, lo kasha, it's not a contradiction. Kan bahar kavas iser, kan bahar kavas heter. Oh, We'll say very interesting. Everything depends on how you're grafting. If you're grafting something prohibited, I will say, what does that mean? You are not permitted to graft two different species. That is usur. So if you grafted two different species, then what? Then the maaseh, again, you can't claim a war exemption for that. Same way that a kohen gadol who marries an almono also can't go ahead and claim a war exemption because it's sheva brachas. So if you engaged in illegal grafting, right, if you did prohibited grafting, you can't go back from war for that. On the other hand, if you went ahead and you grafted in a permitted fashion and you did not yet get to eat the fruit of your permitted grafting, then ein achinami, for that you would be permitted to go back from war. So hayar kavas hetar hechidami. So what's the case of permitted grafting? Ilema yalda biyalda. If you want to say now, yalda means a young tree within the first 3 years, still within the early years. See, if you want to say you're taking a branch from a young tree and grafting it into another young tree, then I'm going to be permitted to go back for more, not because of the grafting, but why? Because of the original tree. Why? Because within 3 years, I have not yet gotten to eat the fruit of that tree. So even without the grafting, I'm permitted to go back home. Ela yalda bezekeno. Rather, the case must be that you're grafting a branch from a young tree into ultimately an older tree. So what I say here, the logic would be, the assumption is the older tree is already post Orla, so I've already enjoyed the fruit of that. And then what the Mishnah seems to be telling me is, if I have not yet enjoyed the fruit of the graft, then I'm permitted to go back for more to enjoy that fruit. Rabbi Avoh said that can't be true. Yalda shesivika bezekeno. If you grafted the branch of a young tree into an old tree, Batla yalda bizikina. I will say again, the identity of the new branch is subsumed by the identity of the older tree, the ein ba din arla. And I will say, therefore, again, that fruit that comes from the graft of the new branch ultimately will not be subject to arla. So therefore, again, that can't be the case either, because he wouldn't come back for more for that. What's the case? Again, same case where we're assuming that you're grafting. You're grafting the branch of a young tree, into another young tree. Aye, but one second, we said before that Lamaise, you're going to be able to come home for more, not because of the graft, but because of the root tree. This is very interesting. Okay, gone. The case over here is where the original young tree was not planted for its fruit, but rather was planted ultimately again to serve as a barrier, literally a breach in the fence. He had a breach in the fence, he put a tree there, or was served ultimately again because you're going to chop it down and take its wood. Because we both say, in that case, when you plant a tree for those purposes, so that tree loses its designation ultimately again as a fruit tree, and therefore is not subject to the laws of Arla. It's not such a law. Take a look at Rashi. He goes to not to the kamais l'siak. He goes shais appears together. So they over not to appear to listom lashon suga. So look at Rashi. Excuse me. Look at the Gemara. This non hanoteya l'siak ulakoros. If somebody planted a tree for the sake of plugging up a breach in a fence, or because they take the wood from it, patra mina arla, such a tree is patra from arla. Therefore, I both say again, essentially, that fruit tree itself, it's not that original tree is not subject to the laws of arla, because it wasn't planted for fruit. It was planted either to plug up a hole, a breach in the fence, or to serve for wood. When you then graft a new branch into it, and your intention is to eat the fruit of that graft, that becomes like planting a new fruit tree, and you'll be permitted to go back for more because of that. Umayshna yalda bezekena de batla, umayshna yalda biyalda de lo batla. So I don't understand the Gemara. Says why is the difference in these two cases? Why is it that if you graft, we'll call it a young branch into an old tree? So we say that what? That the identity of the young branch is subsumed by the old tree. And yet, when you graft a branch of a young tree onto a young tree, but that young tree is a non-fruit tree, that for some reason the young branch's identity is not subsumed by the young tree's identity. To which much I'll tell you why. Hasam by the old tree, by the zekeno, imimachalav love bas mahadarhi. We'll say when it comes to the older tree, so remember again, there's nothing you could do to change the identity of that tree. Lemais, again, it's already post Arla. Hacha, Rabbi say, but by the case of the yalda tree, the young tree that's now being used to repair a breach in the fence, or that is being used for its wood, imam lechala, if you were to change your mind about its designation and to decide now you want to eat its fruit, then what?
bas mehadarhi. Then Rabbi say it would revert back to being a fruit tree and would be subject to the laws of our law. I'm sorry? Enochinami, right now you don't have to, except we're dealing with a case where a person is not changing the designation. That's the difference over here. So Lamaisa, the case of the Mishnah where the grafting would work, the Gemara is suggesting, is a case where you have a young tree that again, right now, its designation is for wood, or ultimately just to serve as a wall, to serve as a barrier. Then if you graft a new branch into that, and that branch ultimately is going to be used to produce fruit, Lamaisa, again, that's a new grafting from which you could return from more. Midi dahavu a'alu me'elehen, because it's no different ultimately again than fruit. I assure that trees, fruit trees that come up by themselves, disnan alu me'elehen chayavin ba'arla, that ultimately again fruit trees that ultimately blossom by themselves are subject to the laws of Arla. Rashi says, Mida dahava alu me'elehen tibishas natia lecha kavana, at the time when you planted it, ultimately again there was no specific kavana. Well, let's just go a little bit weiter. V'lukma bekerem shloshtei shnutfin. So why don't you establish this case as a case of dealing with a vineyard or of two partners? So the Gemara says, Dahai hadra adidei, v'hai hadra adidei. Let each person return ultimately again because of his particular growth. Look at Rashi, we'll say just for a moment. V'lukma bekerem shoshnei shotfin, lamali laduri ashinuya dechika benotea l'seaga l'koros, v'lukma benotea l'achila, u'dekashlan tepokle mishum debayla mehadar mishum mishona, lishni kegon shenetia shel ruvin uvbash shel shimon, v'hir so why don't you set up like this? You have a tree that's owned by Reuven and Shimon. The primary tree is owned by Reuven. It's already a post-Arla tree. Then Shimon comes along and grafts a branch onto that tree. And therefore, maybe the Mishnah is telling me that what? That Lamaisa Shimon could come back from war ultimately because of the new graft, to which the Gemara says, Amra Papa Zoso Maris, excuse me, I'm sorry, you don't have to tell me that. It's not a post-Arla tree. Reuven's tree is within 3 years. Shimon then puts a graft on it, and grafts another branch into it. Reuven will come back because of his tree. Shimon comes back because of his graft, to which the Gemara says, Amra Papa Zoso Maris, this tells us, Kerem Shol Shnei Shlutfin Ein Chodron Alav. The fact that the Mishnah does not include this case tells us that a jointly owned Kerem, jointly owned vineyard, is not an exemption from war. Ein Chodron Alav Me'arachem Lochama. Meaning one vineyard can't exempt two people. Rabbi say, why is that different than the case of where one brother dies in battle, all five brothers, he dies without children, all five brothers who are technically subject to Yibam all return from war for one woman. So five brothers could return from war for one woman. Why can't two people return from the same vineyard? Rabbi say, here's the difference. By the Yibam case, every one of those brothers has a connection to this woman. So by the Yibum case, the sister-in-law is called the wife of each of these men, but by the Kerem, by the vineyard of Osai, neither man could claim it is his Kerem. Neither man could claim that it's his exclusive vineyard. Therefore, again, the Gemara is suggesting that if you have a jointly owned Kerem, that would not be grounds for return from war. We'll have to stop over here. We'll pick up with Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok tomorrow.